Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Industry, regulators, academics collaborating on water issues. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Regulators, academics, and water companies at the forefront of advancing beneficial reuse of produced water outside the oil industry discussed the path forward at the Produced Water Society's Permian Basin Conference. Quote, "The industry decided it would have to move forward with beneficial reuse instead of disposing of the water," noted Mike Hightower, program director at the New Mexico Produced Water Research Consortium. He told the audience in 2022-23, the consortium tested 3 or 4 treatment technologies. In 2024, as many as 24 were tested, and he said 5 or 6 are already lined up to be tested next year. Likewise, Rusty Smith, executive director of the Texas Produced Water Consortium, is seeing an increase in proposals. Quote, "2 years ago, we couldn't have pinpointed a single treatment facility. Today, we have companies with facilities testing beneficial reuse," Smith said. "We have a report headed to Texas legislators in October about partnering with the industry, what we've seen, what we've analyzed, what we've learned," end quote. Adrienne Lopez, research and development manager with Texas Pacific Water Resources, said about a year ago her company was looking at any project it could think of before settling on a lab environment testing produced water on alfalfa grown in soils from 3 different counties. The water had various levels of total produced solids. Quote, "Today, we know a lot more about water, and we can have more creative discussions on what to do with produced water and its potential uses," she said. Ted Wooten, chief engineer in the Oil and Gas Division at the Railroad Commission, said the agency has been talking with those in the industry and is aware of the projects underway. Quote, "I am compelled to believe in the processes they use. I believe in the purity," he said. "I trust them," end quote. Lori Fleet, special assistant in the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality's Office of Water, noted that her agency is relatively new to the issue, having just been granted authority to issue state and federal discharge permits by the Environmental Protection Agency just a couple of years ago. Quote, "We can digest all the research, but the public is looking over our shoulders and will be contesting permits," she said. "Already, the order of magnitude of discharge applications has gone off the charts," she said. Quote, "That's our future. We can do things to be protective of the processes and standards in place, so we can track the permits and ensure water is protected," she said. What concerns Wooten, he said, is that the information being conveyed about the efforts. It may make complete sense to those in the room, quote, "But what about the other 95%, he said. "How do we convince the public it's cleaner? How do we tell them there's nothing in the water that will affect them? Because they're hearing the complete opposite," end quote. Hightower noted that the public needs to be made aware the efforts involve treated produced water, not raw produced water. Some efforts have yielded water that is higher quality than the Pecos River. Still, he sees tremendous support from the community for efforts to clean produced water and turn it into a new source of water for use on parks or golf courses. And he said, industries not generally supportive of oil and gas are also very interested in treated produced water for use in their operations. Beneficial Reuse of Produced Water, Ready to Move Ahead. The story was written by Mellon McEwen, oil editor. In 125 years of business, engineering, construction, and project managing firm, Bechtel has faced a number of challenges. Quote, "We haven't seen a challenge quite as unique as the Permian Basin's produced water," said Jamie McMillan, general manager, water and pipeline, as he addressed the second day of the Produced Water Society's Permian Basin Conference. He cited the complexity of the water as well as the volumes generated and told his audience the greatest challenge is finding alternatives to disposal by injection. Quote, "That includes beneficial reuse. Beneficial reuse has evolved over the last 7 years and made tremendous progress. I believe we are close to a step change and we're ready to take that next step," McMillan said. What is blocking that next step is finding the answers to two questions. Is it technically possible and is it economically viable? When clients from Diamondback to Chevron and more asked the company to help tackle the issue of produced water, he said Bechtel spent hours understanding the spectrum of constituents in the water and just what to do with that water. Quote, "We quickly realized there are already commercially available technologies," he said, adding that research consortiums in Texas and New Mexico have done great research, and there are a number of pilot projects also yielding good results. He said the industry has come a long way in closing the gap between disposal costs and treating costs and is coming closer to making beneficial reuse competitive. Quote, "Being technically possible doesn't matter if it's not economic," he pointed out. Bechtel itself has been testing its proprietary low-energy ejector desalination system technology, known as LEEDS for short, to provide produced water desalination services to customers across the Permian Basin. The company has partnered with Five Point Energy for Deep Blue Holdings, a portfolio company of Five Point, to operate the pilot unit at a saltwater disposal well near Midland. Speaking with the Reporter Telegram after his presentation, McMillan said the test will end around the end of the month and has treated effluent containing anywhere from 120,000 to 190,000 parts per million of total dissolved solids, reducing that to about 34 ppm of TDS. Desalination, he explained, is a critical step in treating produced water, especially in the Permian Basin, where the water has such high salinity, 3 to 4 times that of the ocean. Traditional treatments don't work, he noted. Quote, "When our customers, who are all major players in the Permian Basin, told us they had a huge water problem, an existential problem, we knew desalination had to be one of the steps. We also realized it was more complicated than that one step," he said. Creating value from produced water, like extracting minerals or selling to other industries like agriculture, is a ways away, he said. But the various pilot projects testing beneficial reuse are reaching a point of maturity and providing enough data that such efforts are within reach. Bechtel is in talks with other companies about repeating its LEEDS pilots elsewhere and is preparing to commercialize the unit. "It's ready, sitting on the shelf, waiting for the right partner to bring it to market," he said. The industry, he said, can't treat water as business as usual. It's critical the industry figure this out before someone shuts us down. The industry is too critical to the world's economy, to security, he said. SM Energy details Woodford Barnett well results. The story was written by Mellon McEwen, oil editor. After keeping mum on activity in its Sweetie Peck area, SM Energy is spilling the beans on its work on the development at the intersection of Midland, Upton, and Crane counties. During its second quarter earnings call, SM President and Chief Executive Officer Herb Vogel told analysts the company has confirmed bringing online two Woodford Barnett wells during the quarter. One, a 10,200-foot lateral test, had a 30-day peak initial potential of 1,622 barrels of oil equivalent per day, while the second, a 5,900-foot lateral, had a 30-day initial potential peak of 830 BOE per day. Quote, "We are very pleased with early results and the potential to add more than 20,000 prospective net acres in this deeper formation," Vogel said during the call. He said the two wells, together with offset operator wells, indicate more than 20,000 net acres at Sweetie Peck that are prospective for Woodford Barnett development, inclusive of previously announced acreage additions to the west. Quote, "We have been tight-lipped about our activity in the greater Sweetie Peck area for some time as we added acreage," he told analysts. But with the production data now public, he said the company was pleased to report the data. "Initial results compare favorably to peers in the area," he said. In the Midland Basin, SM plans 72 wells drilled and 71 completions. The expected average lateral length is about 11,760 feet, including 32 wells with 15,000-foot average lateral length. SM plans to run 4 rigs and 2 completion crews. Study says more well blowouts to come. The story was written by Amanda Drain. Black water erupted from another West Texas oil well last week in the same area as one that flowed toxic water for weeks and inspired a controversial no-fly zone in December, worsening the recent rash of foul water blowouts affecting the area. The most recent blowout outside Grand Falls in Pecos County also follows one on a neighboring ranch in June, which was roughly 14 miles from the unusual Crane County well that raised eyebrows earlier this year, at about 5 miles from the so-called Lake Bomer, the infamous ever-growing 60-acre body of poison water spewing from an old wildcat well. A recent study from Southern Methodist University found these were not isolated incidents. Researchers linked the blowouts with the practice of injecting oil field wastewater underground. The study suggests wastewater leaked from its containers into subsurface pathways, accumulating into an underground aquifer that is putting pressure on aging wells. As pressure mounts, several more such blowouts are possible in the near future, the study, which launched in January 2023 after the first big Crane County blowout in 2022, said. Quote, "The pressure is increasing because there is more and more water accumulating," Vamshish Karanam, an SMU researcher who authored the study, said in an interview last month. The need for further study of the underground pathways contributing to these blowouts is urgent, he said. The recent outbreak of toxic salt water from old wells is also near Antina Ranch, the 22,000-acre property that has become a poster child for the issue of old wells springing back to life. The crew assembled to address the issue at Antina calls them zombie wells. The most recent blowout on Laura Briggs' ranch began August 1st, said Hawk Dunlap, a well control specialist who works at Antina. Dunlap, who said he was called to help address the issue, estimated water was flowing from the orphaned oil well at about 20 gallons a minute. Briggs said Thursday during an interview that the same contractor, Holman Well Service, plugged another orphaned well on her property last year that has already begun to leak. She said she fears improperly plugged wells on the property could lead to the formation of sinkholes. Quote, "What's unfortunate is this one's very close to my house," Briggs said, estimating that the new blowout is roughly 350 yards from her home. Holman did not immediately reply to a request for comment. Sarah Stogner, an oil and gas attorney with Antina and a vocal critic of the state's oil and gas regulators, said she requested a temporary restraining order Wednesday that would prohibit state contractors from continuing to improperly plug the well. Quote, "It's putting a Band-Aid on the severed artery," said Dunlap, who is also a Libertarian candidate for the seat held by Chairman Christy Craddock on the Railroad Commission of Texas, which regulates the state's oil and gas industry. A spokeswoman for the Railroad Commission said in a statement, "The agency began working at Briggs' property last week, using vacuum trucks and lined pits to manage the uncontrolled flow of water." Quote, "This week, a rig is also being used to work on controlling the well and water flow, and we will continue to do that work because the Railroad Commission's critical mission, which we diligently adhere to, is protecting the environment and public safety," she said.
Shooting in West Odessa leaves one dead. A 49-year-old man was arrested Sunday after he called 911 and confessed to shooting another man to death in West Odessa. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, Omar Babativa Beltran told dispatchers he killed a man in the 12,000 block of West Love Drive Trail. When deputies arrived, Beltran came outside the residence at the request and threw two handguns down on the porch, the report stated. They then went inside the home and found Raul Hernandez Uribe, 44, dead in the living room with gunshot wounds. A 61-year-old witness told deputies he saw Beltran shoot an unarmed Uribe without provocation, the report stated. The witness said Beltran also pointed the gun at him and told him he couldn't leave. Deputies noted Beltran had two holsters, one inside his waistband on the left and another on the outside on the right. Sheriff Mike Griffiths said the motive is unknown at this point, but the men had been drinking beer. Beltran was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of murder and aggravated kidnapping with a deadly weapon. He's being held on surety bonds totaling $350,000. YWLA to unveil revitalized outdoor education space. Young Women's Leadership Academy has announced the ribbon cutting of its newly revamped outdoor learning space and greenhouse. A ribbon cutting ceremony and tour will take place at 1:30 p.m. August 14th at the YWLA campus in Midland. This comprehensive project transforms the area into a thriving educational hub dedicated to water conservation, native plant cultivation, and outdoor learning, a news release said. Key features of the revamped space include water conservation and irrigation, the rehab of cisterns to capture rainwater, coupled with the renovation of the greenhouse into a functional classroom lab, creates a sustainable ecosystem. Outdoor classroom and xeriscape lab, the addition of benches and the optimization of existing structures provides ample space for outdoor learning and hands-on exploration of native plants. Community engagement. The project fosters a sense of community through planned volunteer work days involving students, families, Exxon employees, and members of the Southside communities. We are excited to unveil this enhanced space that aligns perfectly with our educational goals, said YWLA principal Laura Doty. This project not only promotes environmental stewardship, but also creates a dynamic outdoor learning environment for our students. We are honored to inherit the space and continue the work of those who came before us at Booker T. Washington, and grateful to ExxonMobil for the vision and providing us the funding to help us build upon the work started by PTOs of the past. We are thrilled to support the renovation of the YWLA Outdoor Education Space, said Keith Underwood, Midland Project Manager at ExxonMobil. This project aligns with our commitment to fostering educational opportunities and environmental stewardship in our community. We believe that providing students with a dynamic and engaging outdoor learning environment will inspire the next generation of leaders and innovators. Congratulations to everyone involved in making this vision a reality. Our view, more shenanigans from the city. The Point, the city of Odessa is being sued again, and it is tied to the same employee who drives his city-owned vehicle back and forth to Lubbock, where he apparently lives, but you won't find a paper trail on that, as no written reprimand is on file, just another day at the city of Odessa. For months, we've been hearing nothing but glowing remarks from Odessa City Manager John Beckmeyer and Jamie Tisdale about the Odessa Accountability Project, about what a great job Chris Adams is doing as the city's new Equipment Services Director. Since he began in June 2023, Adams has convinced the City Council to create the city's own tire shop and to fuel its own vehicles. Beckmeyer has said the tire-changing shop will save the city $50,000 a month alone, and Adams has said the city will save $750,000 the first year by fueling its own vehicles. Adams has also been praised for going above and beyond to find parts for Odessa's failing garbage trucks and finding new trucks with quick delivery dates. Has the new tire shop and fuel delivery changes really resulted in cost savings for the city? We'll find out, because we just filed Texas Public Information Act requests asking for those figures. But there are some things we do know, and we think you should know them too. First, Adams is the reason the city is being sued again. Last week, Southern Tire Mart filed a lawsuit against the city alleging Adams, for some unknown reason, has hostile feelings toward the company, and as a result, the city has intentionally violated Texas law by purchasing tires from a competitor for the last year. The lawsuit alleges Adams falsely claimed STM double-billed the city for more than $180,000 and did not retract the statement despite being shown documents disproving it. We also know Adams has ticked off a lot of people by getting the city council to purchase millions of dollars in vehicles from out-of-state dealers instead of from hometown dealerships. Most recently, the council voted 6-1 to purchase 24 white and one black Ford F-150 police responder 4x4 trucks from Phil Long Ford in Denver, Colorado for $1.3 million. But there's something else we know. We know that Adams has been violating city policy by driving back and forth to Lubbock in a city-owned vehicle. We also know he got slapped on the wrist for it. According to emails obtained by the Odessa American through the TPIA, Ector County Commissioner Don Stringer sent Beckmeyer an email on August 1st saying three constituents informed him about Adams' commute. Apparently, Mr. Adams has moved to Lubbock. This in and of itself is not a problem. The problem is he has been observed using the taxpayers' Ford Explorer to commute between Odessa and Lubbock. As a taxpayer myself, I request a formal investigation into this matter, Stringer wrote. I trust that the city of Odessa has active GPS monitoring, which will confirm or put to rest these accusations. There is no room for this malfeasance in our community. I look forward to your reply after your investigation. Instead of replying to Stringer, Beckmeyer responded to City Attorney Dan Jones, stating simply that the situation has been addressed. Jones asked if anything had been put in writing. To my knowledge, I do not know of anything in writing or how it was addressed, other than telling Chris Adams not to use the vehicle, Jones wrote. Beckmeyer responded 1 minute later with, "No, that is how it was addressed." Stringer was informed of just that. He let it go with a thank you. So what is the city's vehicle policy? Vehicles are not for personal use and cannot be used to serve personal purposes, even during working hours. However, if they live in Ector or Midland County, they can use their assigned vehicle for normal home-to-work commuting, if they could be called into work at any hour. The punishment for violating the policy, appropriate disciplinary action up to and including termination. We also know that Beckmeyer was informed on July 19th that Adams was among the new department heads who didn't have a vehicle allowance, and Adams began getting a $6,000 allowance that began a couple of days before Stringer complained. Yep, Adams gets $500 a month car allowance, and get this, that's higher than any other employee in the city. Deputy City Manager Gabby Bernal gets $325 a month, and Beckmeyer, Jones, and Communication Director Monica McDaniel, who after her most recent raise gets $161,200 a year, only gets $300 a month for their vehicle allowance. Most other departments' heads get around $250, so he gets a vehicle allowance and still drives a city-owned vehicle back and forth to Lubbock. Now we don't know if Adams lives in Lubbock, but we're pretty sure he does because he's a real estate agent there and his Facebook page says he lives there. Sure, he did the right thing and filled out an outside employment agreement with the city, stating he is a realtor in his free time, but come on, it is 278 miles round trip to Lubbock, and he was using a city vehicle to make it. Between that, the lawsuit, and the dissing of our local dealerships, we're not so sure Adams really is all he's cracked up to be. And if that lawsuit costs the city more than what the city ends up saving through the fuel program and the tire shop, we'll know he isn't. Speaking of lawsuits, we're sure you remember that former assistant city manager Aaron Smith filed a whistleblower lawsuit against the city in April 2023. Smith claims Mayor Javier Hoven and other city officials got mad at him when he said Hoven and the rest of the city council unlawfully fired city manager Michael Marrero and city attorney Natasha Brooks, and Hoven unlawfully hired the consulting firm T2 for a city manager search. Anyway, Ector County District Court indicate the city's outside counsel, Jeff Whitfield, is trying to prohibit Smith's attorney, Bobby Bland, from deposing Bernal, Jones, Hoven, and HR Director Charles Hurst. Whitfield says Bland blew a March 14th deadline to gather evidence under the state's Level 2 Discovery Control Plan. In legal terms, Whitfield said the discovery period ended on that date, and yet Bland didn't ask for dates to depose these folks until May 16th. Whitfield also said Bland, without conferring with him, filed a schedule of events with Ector County District Court Judge John Schrode, and the judge granted it, leaving the defendant with no opportunity to object or respond to plaintiff's misleading requests. Hoven, Jones, Bernal, and Hurst got word on July 26th. They'd been deposed on August 26th and August 27th. Whitfield wrote in his motion to quash, Bland responded to Whitfield's motion stating, the lawsuit clearly stated that discovery would be conducted under the state's Level 3 discovery control plan, and the defense never objected. It wasn't until June 18th that the defense said discovery would be conducted under a Level 2 plan, Bland wrote. The Ector County District Attorney also said he provided Whitfield a proposed schedule of events back in May, and he never responded. Bland also pointed out Whitfield didn't complain about the scheduling over an order the judge signed until more than 30 days had passed. Whitfield has asked Schroe to cancel the schedule submitted by Bland, and Bland has filed a motion in opposition to that. If the schedule stands, depositions would have to be completed by October 13th, and the case would have to be mediated by October 25th. If the judge's schedule allows, the case could head to trial December 2nd.
Oldest person in the world dies at 117. Maria Brañas, an American-born Spaniard considered the world's oldest person at 117 years old, has died, her family said on Tuesday. In a post on Brañas' X account, her family wrote in Catalan, Maria Brañas has left us. She has gone the way she wanted, in her sleep, at peace, and without pain. The Gerontology Research Group, which validates details of people thought to be 110 or older, listed Brañas as the oldest known person in the world after the death of French nun Lucille Randon last year. The next oldest person listed by the Gerontology Research Group is now Japan's Tokimo Itoka, who is 116 years old. Brañas was born in San Francisco on March the 4th, 1907, after living for some years in New Orleans, where her father founded a magazine, her family returned to Spain when she was young. Brañas said that she had memories of crossing the Atlantic Ocean during World War I. Food Bank receives grant to fund fresh produce for seniors. The West Texas Food Bank announced Tuesday it received a Blue Impact grant from Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Texas, an award reflecting BCBSTX's dedication to community-based organizations that prioritize the well-being of children and families. The grant recognizes the crucial role of local organizations in fostering positive change, tackling underlying factors that influence health, including socioeconomic challenges, and promoting economic opportunities. We are so grateful to have corporate partners like Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Texas. This award will help us reach more seniors with fresh produce. We know there is stress in our senior community with the cost of groceries, gas, and the cost of living, so to have Blue Cross and Blue Shield come in and help us to provide all the produce that is needed for them is really special. We can't say thank you enough. Libby Stevens, CEO of the West Texas Food Bank, said in a news release. BCBSTX has awarded more than $25 million in grants to community organizations statewide since 2011, touching the lives of millions of Texas children and families. Midland Habitat for Humanity dedicates 196th house. Midland Habitat for Humanity, MHFH, celebrated their latest homeowner, August the 15th, with the dedication of its 196th home in the 500 block on S. Lee Street to the Rayana Reyes family. Braving the brutal West Texas sun, friends, family, and future Habitat homeowners gathered to support the new homeowner. The Warren Charitable Foundation generously provided funding for the build. Pro Petro and Ring Energy provided volunteers to help construct the home. Reyes worked over 250 hours of sweat equity in addition to completing the Habitat's homeowner college program with classes on personal finance, homeowner maintenance, civic engagement, health and wellness, and more. Habitat is incredibly thankful for the Warren Charitable Foundation and their commitment to Habitat and our mission of changing lives through affordable homeownership. We are also so proud of Rayanna and the hard work and dedication she showed in getting through our programs. We're thrilled to add another home and family to a growing South Midland neighborhood. Joey Hopkins, MHFH's executive director, said, at the event, Reyes expressed her thankfulness for the Habitat program. This home means more to us than words can express. We are overjoyed to start this new chapter of our lives in a place we can finally call our own. Thank you once again to everyone involved for making this possible for us. Your kindness and support have made a huge, lasting impact in both of our lives that we will never forget. MHFH is one of the premier institutions responsible for constructing affordable housing in the Permian Basin. The organization's partnership model offers deserving, hardworking families a hand up. MHFH uses a rigorous qualifying process that includes progress from the application through homeownership. Each participant contributes a minimum of 250 hours of sweat equity on the worksite and completes a home ownership education program. Successful candidates are then awarded a 0% interest mortgage, making home ownership a reality for some of the most deserving families in the Permian Basin. Anyone interested in supporting MHFH's efforts in the Permian Basin can contact Jeff Myers, Chief of Staff, at 432-686-8877. Or for more information, visit HabitatMidland.org or call 432-686-8877. Obituaries. Jose Guadalupe Gonzalez, age 86, of Odessa, Texas, passed away on August the 17th, surrounded by family at his home in Odessa. The visitation will be 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, August the 21st, with a recitation of the Rosary to follow at 6 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, August the 22nd, at St. Mary's Catholic Church. A burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Larry Leon Melton died after a lengthy battle with Parkinson's on August the 19th in Odessa. A celebration of life service will be held at 2 p.m. at First Methodist Odessa on Friday, August the 23rd. Kenneth Edward Williams, age 57, of Odessa, passed away on August the 18th in Odessa, surrounded by family. Visitation will be held at 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Thursday, August the 22nd, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, August the 23rd, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. The burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. John E. Morris of Glendale, Texas, passed away on August the 15th. A celebration of life will be held at the shop in Gardendale on Sunday, September the 1st at 10 a.m., with lunch to follow. Michael Isaiah Sanchez passed away on August the 15th at Houston Methodist Hospital. Visitation for Michael will begin 11 a.m. Wednesday, August the 21st at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Funeral services will be held 1 p.m. Thursday, August the 22nd at the First United Pentecostal Church, with a burial to follow at Ector County Cemetery in the Rose Hills section.
Woman facing gunshots said she was terrified, then angry that the suspect was let loose on a low bond. By Rob D'Amico. Rob at BigBenSentinel.com. Editor's note, the Big Bend Sentinel reached out to the Presidio County Sheriff's Office, but has not yet received a response confirming information or a mugshot. Marfa. Irlanda Vargas said she was desperately trying to tell a shooter firing shots at her car early Wednesday morning who she was and why she was in the Marfa Open parking lot. A first shot coming from the Marfa Open porch sent her in a panic, terrified and confused about who would be shooting at her and why. Then the unexpected happened. The shooter's dog, which had fled the porch with the first shot, crossed the parking lot and jumped into Vargas's car. "I thought that if I left, the shooter would follow me to get his dog," she said. Vargas said she grabbed the dog's collar and yanked it out of her car, just as a second gunshot hit the passenger side of her car. Vargas, a longtime Alpine resident, said she had gotten out of the driver's side of her car, trying to communicate with the shooter, but then after getting the dog out, she jumped back in, backed her car up, and sped out of the parking lot just as a third shot rang out. Vargas said she doesn't know why Matty Gray took aim at her in her car, as police alleged, but she said she's angry that a local judge released him on a low bond and is further upset with police for not informing the community about the incident until Saturday, after it was first reported by the Big Bend Sentinel. Vargas, who could not be immediately reached in Friday's story on the shooting, connected with the Sentinel Saturday, outlined her account of the ordeal, and said she wanted to speak publicly about concerns she has over how the incident was handled by authorities. Security video given to the Sentinel by Marfa Open confirms the general details of the incident, which were also outlined by the Marfa Police Department in a Friday email and the Saturday release posted on the department's Facebook page. According to police statements and security video, a man showed up around midnight Wednesday at Marfa Open at 102 South Plateau Street with a pistol, urinated off the porch, sat down, and then took aim at a car that had just pulled into the parking lot. The man then fired a shot at the vehicle, waited, then fired another shot before firing once more as the car left the parking lot. Marfa Police said in their statement they were notified about the incident when they pulled a woman over for a traffic stop just after midnight. And the woman reported that someone at the Marfa Open lot had fired shots at her while she sat in her car. The officer also noted a bullet hole in the car. Reports of shots fired were also called in. Vargas added details to the police account and said when she sped out of Marfa Open, she turned left on West San Antonio, and she was distraught and driving erratically, trying to get to the police station, which was why she was pulled over. After police started investigating the area around Marfa Open, they pulled over a pickup truck driven by Matty Gray, 37. Officers found a pistol in the car and later viewed the video of the shooting to identify Gray. Police arrested Gray, who most recently has been living in Valentine, and charged him with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, deadly conduct, discharge of firearm in certain municipalities, driving under the influence, and unlawful carry of a firearm, according to the police statement. The Presidio County Jail initially said he was released on a $25,000 bond Wednesday, but the judge who magistrated Gray, Presidio County Judge Joe Portillo, texted the Sentinel to say it was $20,000. This is not the same Matthew Gray as the artist who is working on sculptures west of Valentine. The security video was released to the Big Bend Sentinel by Jason McHenry, who runs Marfa Open. McHenry said he wanted to show that Marfa Open was not having an event or party at the time. The video shows a man that appears to be gray sitting on an empty and quiet porch with no other sounds in the background. McHenry said Marfa Open was not connected to Gray in any formal way, but that he had done his laundry there a couple of times. McHenry said he and two others at Marfa Open had just gone to sleep when they awoke to loud popping noises. "It was over before we knew what happened," he wrote in a statement to police. "We immediately called the police, who acted swiftly and had him in custody in a matter of minutes. Fortunately, we had video cameras that detailed the entire incident from two separate angles." Marfa Open is a space that hosts artists in residence and art showings, and also runs an art supply store. Vargas said she knew of Gray, but was not close with him and had no idea why he shot at her. Maddie Gray had been living in a trailer behind the Valentine Bar, said owner Jeff Wilson, who spoke to the Sentinel on the Marfa Open porch Friday afternoon. He said he believes Gray, whom he knew well, had left Valentine after the incident. Wilson and McHenry said they have no clue what motivated Gray to shoot at Vargas. They speculated that the Marfa bars had just closed. Gray could have been highly intoxicated, and he may have thought someone was after him. "He was over here," Wilson said, pointing to a back part of the parking lot, angled and parking in a defensive position. The video is not being released presently at the request of Marfa Open and Vargas. It shows what is alleged to be Gray pulling into the parking lot, then moving his truck to a corner not captured by security cameras. Then the porch video shows him striding up with his dog, carrying a pistol. The man is wearing a black T-shirt with Austin Moto on the back and a straw cowboy hat, accompanied by his dog. After relieving himself and sitting down, the camera picks up a white sedan entering the lot and stopping parallel to the porch. McHenry said he later found out that Vargas was texting her friend to let him know she had arrived. The man points the pistol directly at the car, which was a fair distance away across the lot, and says, "Who's that?" He then says, "Call out your name. You're on private property. You're on private property. Call out your name." He fires a shot at the sedan, which sends his dog fleeing the porch, and again says, "Call out your name. You're on private property." Then he says, "Keep going, whoever you are, keep going," before firing a second shot that clearly hits the passenger side of the sedan. The sedan backs up, turning to face the exit, and proceeds to drive away, but the man fires a third and final shot at it. McHenry said that after Gray's dog fled, he was found and returned to Valentine, but it's unclear whether he went back to Gray. Gray has been a regular at the Valentine Bar and bartender there for the past several months, according to patrons of the bar and Facebook posts by Gray. Vargas said the bond set for Gray was far too low, considering that she could have been killed and that Gray could pose a threat to others in the area. The Sentinel asked Judge Portillo for comment, but he only responded by text Sunday on the bond amount being $20,000. He did not answer to if there were any conditions of release, which almost all those arrested are given after meeting bond, a checklist that outlines specific things that could revoke the bond and have them jailed again. Commonly, conditions like staying out of bars, not associating with victims or certain criminals, and frequently a requirement that they stay in a certain area, usually the county they are in. The Sentinel filed a records request for any conditions set for Gray. Local attorney Liz Rogers, who was at Gray's magistration to help with the bond process, said stricter conditions are usually found at the federal court level, and it's not uncommon for restrictions on individuals to be much laxer in state felony cases, often with the bail bond company keeping tabs on their clients' locations and getting them to court hearings. The Sentinel filed an open records request for those conditions. Rogers said she did not request anything regarding the bond amount from Portillo. She said she would not be representing Gray in the case, and it's still uncertain who his attorney will be. Several people contacted for this story questioned why the Marfa Police Department didn't inform the community of the incident and only sent out statements after being contacted by the Sentinel. While the statement posted on Saturday to Facebook was dated August 7th, the date of the incident, the department had withheld the information until August 10th. The Sentinel reached out to Gray for comment, but has not received a response. Photo courtesy of Marfa Open. A man is caught on video readying his aim to fire at a woman's car. Presidio County approves program to help finance clean energy improvements by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa. At last Wednesday's meeting, the Presidio County Commissioners Court voted to start a program in coordination with the Texas PACE, Property Assessed Clean Energy Program, which brings counties and private lenders together to help home and business owners finance improvements that would help make their properties more eco-friendly and, in the long run, less expensive to maintain. The program targets upgrades that will reduce water and energy consumption with a wide variety of applications, ranging from new roofs and windows to solar panels and rainwater collection systems. The program works by connecting property owners with third-party lenders to offer a low-risk loan bolstered by a property lien enforced by the local taxing entity, with a PACE agreement. Anyone in a city or county with a PACE agreement can apply. Ranging from multi-million dollar investments in big city hotels to lower income homeowners who want to save on their energy bills. It's pitched as a win-win, helping people rein in their utility costs while reducing strain on the state's energy grid and drought-sapped water supply. People don't have money to waste, and we don't have energy to waste, said Charlene Haydinger, president of the nonprofit Texas PACE Authority. Haydinger explained that equipment for clean energy systems can be very expensive up front, and traditional lenders, like local banks, might not be willing to foot the bill. As a result, many buildings are built to the minimum standards required by code, even though these buildings cost more in upkeep and utilities in the long term. Loan agreements drawn up through the PACE program are spread out over a longer period of time and are designed to pay for themselves by the time the last payment rolls around. During Wednesday's hearing on the issue, local officials raised a few concerns about legal liability and extra legwork on behalf of the county. Haydinger said folks often worry the program will create bureaucracy and end up costing counties and cities money, but in practice, PACE loans are very hands-off and can benefit local governments immensely. What local governments get are better-built buildings, better-renovated buildings, and empty buildings back on tax rolls, she said. Around 73% of Texans live in areas with local PACE agreements, mostly in urban areas. Counties in the greater Big Bend region are ahead of the curve among rural jurisdictions. Presidio County just joined Brewster, Jeff Davis, Reeves, and Pecos counties to be among the relatively few isolated areas to jump on the opportunity. Rio Cog local government's manager Peggy O'Brien said Jeff Davis County already boasts a successful PACE-funded program at Alta Frontera, just under $3.5 million for water-saving plumbing and an energy-efficient HVAC system. O'Brien said that the program would benefit local tradespeople as well as property owners, providing jobs for contractors, electricians, and more. For more information on PACE, visit https://www.texaspaceauthority.org/. Granado. Anadina N. Salgado Granado, 78, of El Paso, and formerly of Presidio, passed away Sunday, August 4th, 2024, at the Hospitals of Providence East Campus from an unexpected illness. She was born May 5th, 1946, in Ojinaga, Chihuahua, Mexico, to Tomas and Abigail Salgado. She grew up in Presidio and attended Presidio High School. She was the eldest of 10 siblings. She quickly learned how to be self-sufficient and help with the household responsibilities. She also held after-school jobs at a very young age, and Adina met the love of her life, Raimundo Ray Granado, while they were both in high school, and married in September 1964. The family moved to El Paso in 1969, where Anadina held several jobs before beginning a retailing career with Big Lots and retiring from there. Anna was a loving, caring person who never met a stranger. She was witty and was the life of the party. She loved celebrating birthdays and holidays at home, where she prepared all the delicious meals. She is preceded in death by her parents, an infant brother, Jesus Manuel Salgado, and her mother-in-law, Martha Granado. Left to cherish her memory are her husband, Raimundo Granado, daughter, Angie Granado Ruiz, two sons, Ray Granado Jr. and Ricky Granado, all of El Paso, five sisters, Olivia Columbus Roger of Meadow Lakes, Alma Cabezuela, Joe of Edinburgh, Rosario Halpern, Robert of Marfa, Teresa Salgado of Lake Buchanan, and Mirabel Buñuelos, Beto of El Paso, four brothers, Hector Salgado, Liliana of Cal, Tomas Salgado Jr., Maria de Jesus of Marfa, Juan Salgado, Rebecca of San Angelo, and Mario Salgado, Lucila of Ojinaga, Chihuahua. A granddaughter, Alexia Samaniego of El Paso. Four great-grandchildren, several aunts and uncles, and numerous cousins. Visitation was the afternoon and rosary the evening of Monday, August 12th, at Mount Carmel Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass was the morning of Tuesday, August 13th, at St. Francis Xavier Cabrini Catholic Church, and interment in Mount Carmel Cemetery, all in El Paso.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.